Now is your time to flinch.
What's happening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the 13th floor, where the furniture isn't always the best, but the views are amazing. I am your moderator, B. Jones, and today we're going to be getting into some financial fledging. Art's going to be leading that discussion for us today, and we also going to jump into this Colin Kaepernick, Michael Vick situation, man. The guys are going to get a take on that. But before we get too deep into this thing, man, I'm going to go ahead and introduce my fellas. Jay Days, T.I., what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, baby? How we living today?
There's a few different ways I can answer that question, but for the podcast,
I'm optimistic, man. Most optimistic.
Yeah.
There it is.
I'm gonna go over to Deacon Rubra, who's been training his Hall of Fame pitcher, Mike D. What's happening?
Rubra dog. The summer's been hot, but it's been good. Baseball season is over. It's been a good ride, though. It's enjoyable. A whole lot of experiences.
Yeah, definitely want to send congratulations out to that young man. He got a state championship. And he got a lot of exposure out there, man. Mm-hmm. So he's looking to do a lot of great things. Mike Jr., right?
Yes, sir. Mike Deuce.
Yep.
Mike Deuce.
There it is, man. Moving right along to Mr. Logistics. BJ, what's going on, bro?
Evening, everybody. Everybody's good. It's a good day to be alive, man.
Glad to have you back. Glad to have you back.
Glad to have you back. Yes.
To be black. Glad to be black and back.
Hey, Mr. Sex in the City, man. You over there chucking it up. What's happening, bro?
What's going on, y'all? It's a rare condition this day and age to read any good news on a newspaper page. Mm-hmm. Love and tradition of the grand design, some people will say, it's even harder to find. Family matters.
Oh, you should have brought that all the way to the court.
Yeah, you should have. No, just enough.
What?
Boo. Just enough.
That's the audience says.
And leave them hanging like.
Nah, man, you have them on the edge. Man, that's when the audience jumps in. You know what I'm saying? Start singing right along.
I'm not trying to pay royalties. I'm never going to stop.
DJ Barry B. Fresh, man, welcome to the show, man. What's happening?
Buenos dias to my international listeners. We out here, we excited, we ready to go as usual. Let's get it. I hope y'all ready for the Fresh Jam of the Week.
Oh yeah, Fresh Jam of the Week coming up in the show,
man.
Coach K over there in the corner. Coach K over there in the corner, what's going on, bro?
Hey, what's happening, man? You know I can't let Faison just do that. So there's no place like home with your family around you. You're never alone. When you know that you're loved, you don't need to roam because there's no place like home.
227. And baby. I remember that from, like Ian said a while ago, a couple episodes ago, I dropped that. That's my jam.
He did.
I love that show because Jackie was my girl.
Oh man, that was your first crush, huh?
Jackie. Oh yeah, I was like, yeah, I was young. That was Jackie was everybody's first crush.
I was, I was with Jackie too. Yes, I was definitely with Jackie.
Still have no idea what's going on right now.
We gonna skip over all of that. Then
for you youngsters, it was T and Tamara's mama on Sister.
There you go.
Bow.
Oh.
There you go.
Man, it was before she had the twins.
Yeah, way before.
Okay.
But it came right after Mary and the Jeffersons. She got her own show. That's where it all started went. So it all connected. Back then, people were on the same shows and just it was big connection. And it kind of all, awesome. Now it's all spread.
Yeah. So
stop asking.
It wasn't
the, not in the same time, but you knew.
Only people.
There's only black actors recycled.
Those are the only black actors.
Yeah, it's like those Spike Lee movies, man.
Over
they use
and
the same,
over again.
Yeah, same actors.
Man. It's good stuff.
Carol, what's going on, man?
I think Spike used to sign people to a contract or something. Like, you got to do this many movies for me.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. You think he was holding on tight to him?
I think Spike was signing, like, multi-movie deals. And this is what it is. You get this money, that's it. Doesn't matter how well the movie does, this is it.
Yeah, you have exactly. You are into me for three movies.
We need to have our fact checker.
We have our fact checker here today. So BJ,
fact checker is here.
you were officially given that role on one of the podcasts that you weren't in attendance for. So I hope you're ready.
Damn, though. When you're not here, what happens?
While you were not there to vote, you have been voted in.
Hey, so listen, man, let me tell y'all about the craziness that happened the other day. So we are short people at work. That means that I, as the purchase manager now, do appraisals a couple days a week. So I go out to appraise a RX-8. Terrible vehicle.
Really?
Anyway, yes.
Yeah, that's that like rotary motor or something.
Yeah,
two cylinders. So 2004, I go out to appraise the car. First of all, I'm walking out. I got the keys. I see the person getting the car appraised by the car, but on the passenger side. So I'm there like, what's going on? She's like, oh, are you coming to appraise this car? I was like, yeah, I sure am. She's like, oh, okay, I need to get something out of here. But she's on the passenger side. So I unlock the door and her son gets out.
Mm. So I'm sitting there.
Well, he's small. He's in the passenger seat. He had to be like maybe 8, 9 years old.
Okay.
I wasn't in the car yet. I'm not at the car.
Okay.
But I'm trying to figure out why she couldn't get her son out the car before. She's like, oh, well, you know, I could have had him open the door, but you know. And I'm like, no, I don't know. But
yeah, I do not.
I didn't say anything. Pretty so weird. I go ahead. I open up the driver door. She's got her son. They go inside. I'm sitting in the driver's seat getting options on the car. All of a sudden, she reappears. And, you know, our RX-8 is not that big.
Nah, man. It's two doors.
So she's kind of in the doorway, and I'm just trying not to look at her, option the car. I look over. She's collecting, like, $2 and maybe 45 cents that's in the driver door panel. And she turns to me and says, oh, I don't want you to think this is because of you or anything. And I'm like...
Well, who else would it be because
of the reason be?
Oh, I mean, is there a vending machine in the
I was gonna say the same thing.
You know what I mean? Maybe she's just trying to give her the benefit of the doubt.
No, it had nothing to do with the vending machine. because she tried to play it off and said, she actually said, oh, I just needed to get some knickknacks out of the door.
That's what we're calling change nowadays.
Anyway, baby.
So she tried to lead me astray and say, oh, well, I don't know if he's going to need the registration. And I'm like, well, he's already put the appraisal in, so he doesn't need your registration. But anyway, so she gets, and it's not like, you know, 2 quarters and 2 dimes, it's like nickels and stuff like that. So
60 pennies.
So what do you all think? What do you guys think I did?
I mean, out of customer service, imagine. I think you just, you know, let it ride. This is your place of employment.
Well, okay, all right. Customer service, okay, I'm with you, but I don't know if you let that ride.
Nah, like, that's what I'm saying. It's the place of employment, so it's only a certain, you can only go so far with. And I mean, I've encountered some of these situations.
Right.
It's crazy, though. I'm going to let you go ahead and end the story, but it's crazy how these people come in and put themselves in this situation, not understanding that you are affecting the person that is about to give you a dollar amount for your vehicle. I just want you guys to think about that. The next time you go to a place where you're going to get your vehicle appraised, think about how you're treating that person that is going to give you that amount for that vehicle. Go ahead, Kay.
So I see what's going on. I reach in my pocket because I had a dollar in my pocket, and I said, ma'am, I said, you know, I'm slightly blessed and I'm lucky to, you know, so you look like you know, you're really trying to gather all that. So here's another dollar. Let me contribute to your cause. Just make sure you pay it forward in the future. And she just looked at me and then she took my dollar and walked off.
What could she do? What could she? She had to. She had to. At that point in time, she had no option.
I like that for several reasons, man. Not only was it like nice, nasty, like Claire Huxtable, nice, nasty, like you didn't let her off the hook. You know what I'm saying? So like now,
couldn't, man.
Next time she has an interaction like this, she's gonna think twice about how she deals with it. And I was talking to my brother in a similar situation, but you can't let people off the hook with these type of situations these days, man.
Couldn't do it. And then, you know, I hit 15 years on, what was that, July 3rd?
Right.
So, you know me, I've been telling everybody 15 years, it's been a good run, so.
You at the point where it's going to take a mountain to move before they get rid of you.
Well, I don't know about all that. Let's not say all of that. We do have some people that work at our place of employment that listen to this podcast. So
that's fair.
We don't want to challenge out there.
Well, there it is, man. Let's move this thing right along, man. We were dealing with this Colin Kaepernick, Michael Vick situation earlier in the week. And I know it's kind of been passed or whatever, but I couldn't let it go, man, just because of the profound effect that I think it will have on the listener base. So for those on the call, as well as that might be listening, you know, right now, you know, you had Michael Vick come on some sports show during the week. He was talking about different athletes. He talked about Zeke Elliott for a little bit. Then they got on the subject of Colin Kaepernick. And as you know, we've spoken about Colin Kaepernick on the show before and how he hasn't had the platform to do some of the things that he does and have the impact that he might want it to have on the league. So Mike Vick comes on the show. They get on the subject of Colin Kaepernick not being on the football team right now because he's still a free agent. And Mike Vick proceeds to say that the main reason that Colin Kaepernick hasn't been picked up yet, it has more so to do with his play on the field than it does his actual, I guess, the political stand that he takes. And he thinks that in order for him to get back on the field, he needs to adjust his image, so cut his hair. He went as far to say as he needs to make himself presentable in order to get back in the league and get back into the good graces of the league. Colin Kaepernick, you know, took that and hit him with, you know, Stockholm Syndrome tweet to respond to that, which we all may or may not know, but that's basically where you identify with or have empathy or sympathy with that person that may have abused you for some time. So putting it all in context, when you're talking about Michael Vick making this statement, this is a dude who we all know about the dog fighting incident. He went to jail for a couple of years, had to sit down for a couple of years, and had to do a whole lot of things that were against, I guess it might have been against his character to get back into the good graces of the league. And so I think that's what he was trying to tell Colin Kaepernick. In order to get back into the good graces with these people who run the league, you need to work on your image and make that a priority to get back into the league. So I want to lead with that with you, fellas, because I want to get your stance on it. I feel a couple of different ways about it. One of my opinions is a little bit unpopular amongst those who I've had this discussion with. And that would be that if Colin Kaepernick does want to play in the league, given the owners, the management, general managers, Michael Vick isn't all the way wrong with what he's telling him to do if it is what he wants to do is play in the NFL, because it's similar. You have to conform to the rules of the industry or wherever you're at to be able to be a part of it. I'm not saying that that's what he should do, because I feel like Michael Vick should have done better to stand beside Colin Kaepernick for where his stance is and how he is in the league. And I had a major problem with the fact that it always seems like there is one person, or there's always somebody that should be on our team or that looks like us or is one of us, but that doesn't support the movement in the way that it should be supported. And so by him directly speaking out, basically telling Colin Kaepernick you need to conform in order to get back into the league or do whatever, you basically like gave the general management or the owners of the league, you gave them
validation to do exactly what they do.
You gave them validation to do exactly what they do. When Colin Kaepernick needs to do is to stand his ground, continue to hold his integrity in the moment and continue to do what he's doing. If he gets back into the league, great. He's definitely good enough to play for somebody, but he doesn't need to compromise himself in order to do that. So I'm going to pass it on to you guys now. I think I'm going to go to Jay since he was a little bit more silent on the podcast last week. Get your take on it, and we just go around the room and have that discussion.
No, that's, I mean, you said a lot in that brief moment, but I think that you do, like, I agree with your opinion. Like, you do have to compromise if you are trying to get back in the league. Like, there's things you have to, I mean, honestly, in life, there's going to be compromises. I don't think that you should compromise your character or your values, but in order to reach any kind of agreement, there has to be compromise. You can't just have it your way and what you want all the way all the time, and vice versa, the other side can't have what they want all the way all the time. So you have to come to an agreement, and in order to agree, I believe you have to compromise. I'm not saying that he should do it in that way, but maybe do it in a way that it better fits him into the understanding of him and the NFL. But as far as like to just to not think that you have to compromise in some way, shape, or form, I think that you kind of shoot yourself in the foot out the gate.
I totally disagree.
Okay, one at a time, fellas.
Faison, he stood and had put his hand.
I followed the rules of school according to BJ's lesson last week. mine's a bit quick. I just think, and we said this before, like a long time ago, we said on one of the podcasts. In order for you to demand that kind of action, he has to have the skill to do so. And because he's just an average player right now, although he couldn't be, but he's an average player, and average players don't get the platform to make demands. So it's not about conforming, but until he gets that status up, he can't demand that until he's on a team. When you're not on a team yet, you got to do what you got to do to get on. Then once you're on, you got to prove and then make actions play.
Go ahead, Fresh. You were going to jump in.
I totally disagree. I applaud Kaepernick on taking a stance, but I think it's deeper than, not even necessarily deeper, but I am a person who gets very agitated with the need to judge on face value and not quality of work. At the end of the day, Kaepernick's job is to play football. At the end of the day, statistically, if you put what he did last year compared to numerous, not just one or two, but numerous quarterbacks who have jobs, some starting jobs across the NFL, it is not a haircut that is denying him the ability to do what he should be paid to do. And I think that goes across the board. You know, I personally had a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, my wife used to work, not 2 years ago that she used to work there, but she used to work at Jay and Family, a corporate entity. You know, a couple years ago, we were at a party with some of her old friends who still work there. And we got in a conversation about tattoos. And the girl was very distraught because she had a younger girl who came in who was like a secretary and had no worry about the tattoo that she had on her shoulder. They went to some JM event. And at the event, she had her shoulder tattoo out, and the girl could not understand why she would be okay with showing her tattoo and thought it was like so disrespectful to the company and XYZ and everything else. I understand. Okay. But I asked her, I said, hey, did this change the quality of the work that she did? No, but you don't understand because, you know, at the job XYZ about, you know, showing tattoo, you guys are in a job where none of your clients actually see you. At best, they talk to a person on the phone. It's only you guys in here, and you're still going to get so offended by a tattoo. It wasn't like she had some, you know, death metal tattoo. It was probably a flower or something beautiful. But it always agitates me that, especially in corporate America and in business, that we get to this place of, you know, well, if you're not in a three-piece suit and, you know, a super tie, you're not really about business. Mm-hmm. I know plenty of extreme business people who are in tank tops, flip-flops, shorts, are geniuses and have, you know, a good sense on them. They just don't, that's not their flavor. And I think that that's something that needs to be further pushed into society, is the understanding of judge people by their character and actions and stop putting up such this, you know, having such prejudgment and basing everything off of, oh my gosh, this guy's got dreads and goals. He has to be some type of criminal. You don't know that. Right. This man, you know, just because of where someone grew up and what they decided to like and, you know, what made them the person that they are, does not automatically categorize them in any negative light until they decide to put themselves in and show that character. It's just unjust and unfair to me on past the scale of black and white. It's just like, as human beings, we need to stop doing it. It doesn't matter if it's the golden dreads or it's the, you know, white rocker guy or the, you know, the goth guy. It doesn't matter. I think that Colin Kaepernick's haircut is not going to change his ability to play ball. I understand in the eyes of, you know, super corporate who feel that you have to have this certain look, but at the end of the day, his job is to play football.
If you play football, we're not talking about the stance.
I thought we were talking about the stance. The problem was the haircut?
Michael Vick was saying that he needs to change his image. He needs to start with a haircut, clean up his the way he looks. And
I retract my statement. I was focusing on the stance, not the haircut.
So I don't think that he should conform at all. I think that, like I said, there's a difference between conforming and compromise, in my opinion.
And go ahead, Kay.
I think we're missing what Mike Vick's whole goal was. And I really haven't heard anybody talk about this. Mike was stepping on Colin's neck to try and get himself a commentator position.
Mm.
Right?
Because isn't that how it works?
I didn't even think about it from that angle.
I can say something
next Stephen Smith
about a guy like this in the league has feels some kind of way about. I'm going to gain favor with owners. I'm going to gain favor with the networks, and somebody's going to extend an invitation to me to be a commentator. Yeah.
But that is what the clean cut guy is.
I am out of a job next season.
That's who he is, though, because when Michael Vick got into that trouble with the dogs and everything, he did a whole lot. He changed everything. He basically did what he needed to do to get back into the league. And what people, I don't think, are realizing when he's talking to Colin Kaepernick, that's the place that he's talking from, because he wanted to play football and he was trying to do whatever it
took to play football. Shannon Sharp said, that's a total different look. What Michael Vick did in killing dogs and in running this, you know, ring of dog killing is totally different than trying to make a civil rights statement. Shannon said, you know, the disproportionate way that brown brothers and sisters are being executed at the end of the day in comparison to how they are supposed to be represented in our nation. That's the only thing that is like, what I understand where you're coming from. And yeah, if Colin Kaepernick had slapped somebody or done something stupid, punched his wife in the face and knocked her out in the elevator. Yes, I understand, brother. You might need to think about, you know, change your image and looking to, you know, be something else. But when it's like, man, you're standing up for an injustice that especially people in that realm, you know, where are our where are our civil rights activists right now? Where are the people who are leading, you know, those types of conversations? They're lost. And to have somebody who, you know, when Kaepernick did it, it was on the cusp of him, you know, just having his Super Bowl season. And he was still a topic of conversation, even though his play had started to go down. He still was a noted figure, and it made an impact. And I respect the fact that he took that stance. And there's no way that I think that, you know, cutting hair is going to change the fact that they are still looking at him like, oh, no, he's the dirty seed. I don't know if you guys just heard in Israel or somewhere else that for basketball, there's a basketball league, and one of the owners of the basketball league started talking about how you cannot have more than three black people on your team because they'll form a gang and it will go crazy. Like, it, the craziest conversation I ever
that
heard.
Happened they again. Didn't somebody say that? That happened in NBA.
You're talking about Sterling. You're talking about Sterling. Sterling just said that he didn't want Magic Johnson.
No. Somebody said, one of the coaches said that to LeBron James, that you're their gang. And LeBron got pretty upset.
He said they're a posse. He said, posse. He didn't say it in the same context that this guy was saying. 100%, if you have more than three black players on your team, they will band together and it will create an issue, like a gang.
Hey, listen. Let's not act like when we all went to school, if we set foot off campus and there were three to four of us together, like we weren't getting stopped by the police asking us where we were going, what we were doing.
I got stopped right outside of my own home in Coral Gables one day.
Right.
I believe it.
I've been stopped.
You didn't grow up that way, Sex in the City.
BFBG,
and this
baby.
is why we have seven different opinions on great topics.
Going back to the fact that he even made that statement, this is the thing that bothered me the most about it. I think I talked about it when we just introduced this topic, but why isn't it the case where Michael Vick and others in the league, because I think Colin Kaepernick's stance could be the building blocks of something much, much greater, especially for the NFL players, if they all got behind him. Because as we already stated, he's not the guy that can lead the charge, but he's the guy that can spark the spark. You know what I'm saying? Why isn't it the case where somebody who was in a similar situation, not even similar, who was in a situation where he was basically ostracized by the league, pushed by the wayside, and had to conform and do everything else to get back into the league. But knowing what he had to give up, you know what I'm saying? Like, maybe I might be reading into it too deeply, but having to give up so much of yourself to conform to the owners and the management of the league to be able to play football, a game that you love so much. I know that had to take a toll on him mentally over that course of time.
Why not?
Michael Vick, yes. From when he had to come in, he had to cut his hair. He had to, you know, play
Because this is all I know. All I know is football. That's how I grew up doing. This is all I know. If I don't have this, I don't have anything. So I will sacrifice whatever I need to in order to be out there on the field.
And that's Michael Vick. But Michael Vick is an even more extreme case because of how great that he was. That exactly what Carol's saying. That his whole, I would do anything, sir, to be able to play the foosball again. Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, there is no that. When you go from being all your life praised, you can do no wrong. You know what that felt like for him to go from that superstar status to all of a sudden, just because one of your homeboys slipped up or some stupid crap, now you are
America's like, most wanted.
Yeah, like the high to the low that he had to have felt in the moments in jail. Like, I know he is broken. He has been broken.
100%. And I think.
Go ahead, Mike.
And I think he genuinely was trying to help. I mean, I think he felt like, from my perspective, this is what I had to do. So if you want to get paid, this is what you're going to have to do.
Mm-hmm. I thought that too. I felt like he maybe could have like elaborated a little bit more. I mean, I didn't really hear the interview, so maybe he could have went into better depth and better explained himself. But I got that vibe too, Mike.
He needed to shut his mouth.
He needed to shut his mouth, man.
That's all I got to say on that.
It's to me, though, there's no comparison, because while I understand in Vic's head what his thought process was, what you guys did are two total different countries. Like, mm-hmm. it's foolish to try to put your act in the issues that you faced in the same room of what he did.
So we got to be careful, because I don't think that's necessarily the case. I don't think he's trying to compare him fighting dogs to Colin Kaepernick taking a stance on social injustice. All I think he was really focused on is what you need to do to be able to get back into this game, if that's what you truly want to do. And so, and my issue is, when you got this dude that's standing on a platform to try and help the betterment of your people, why not give him the support he needs and say, I agree with what he's doing for X, Y, and Z reasons. I think more athletes in the NFL, like Richard Sherman said, should support him in this cause and try to do better about it, because these things lead to other changes within the NFL. You got the MLB, the NBA, they all getting guaranteed contracts. The NBA, once they had a strike, basically, to be able to get their players, you know, paid the way that they wanted to get paid. You had LeBron James signing 2-year agreements and everything. So in order to inspire change, the players got to go get behind something. And this was a perfect opportunity for the players and those outside of the league to jump behind something that is that will be bigger than themselves. And I just feel like the ball was ultimately dropped. And you gave that validation back to the management, saying that, yeah, it's still your league. You can do what you want to do. Y'all can be the puppet masters, and we are the puppets.
You got some people that's looking out for himself, and you got other people looking out for the people. You know what I mean? If you want to look at it like that, everybody doesn't have the same value system, or everybody doesn't have the same views on life. So if Mike Vick don't necessarily share the same opinions as Colin Kaepernick, then he did what he did because that's who he is.
But also, I feel the football players do not feel that they are going to have enough of an impact that, you know, rising. They don't understand that if they did rise behind him, the impact it could make at the end of the day. They feel that they are too. Look, I play football, bro. That's all I do. And I'm just trying to get a check. And I don't need, you know what I mean? Like, I don't need all of that trouble. I want to make sure I can still get here. I want to make sure, you know, you need to have superstars be the catalyst of, you know, the movement in order to make that true impact, as opposed to, you know, Colin Kaepernick did his thing, but it's like, hey man, even people still will agree with him, but they do that silent agree of, oh yeah, I see what he did, yeah, but no, I'm not gonna, you know, I'm here to play football. At the end of the day, man, you know, I'm gonna play football.
And then it's a different dynamic, because if you look at like an NBA team, it's not as many players, so they're a lot closer. Major League Baseball, they're together for a long period of time, so they start in February. They're spending almost every day with each other until October. NFL locker room, you got some people on the offense that never have a conversation with people on the defense. And, you know, there's not the friendship bonds, there's not the relationship, there's not the, even though they talk about I die for my brother on the football field, that's about football. Football's over.
Friendship ain't got nothing to do with that. It's about somebody actually taking a stand and believing that, forget, this is all I know. This is something I believe in, but if I speak up, I'm going to feel the consequence. And exactly. if that was the mentality that everybody had, think the whole civil rights movement. I mean, if you want to put it in perspective, if everybody had a mentality, what would today be like? Like, I think people just...
Here's what I was going to say.
Sell out, basically.
Yeah, man, go ahead.
Why is PETA the most feared organization on the planet?
Dogs, man.
It's more than dogs. It's just animals period. And, where is the organization that people fear like that when it comes to civil rights or equal rights? What organization is feared that way?
There's not.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much money you have, how much power you have. You're scared of PETA. You don't want PETA coming after you.
Well, I would say Black Panthers, Nation of Islam.
They were.
Who's scared of? But who's, no, yeah, I'm about to say who now is scared of? Who is now is scared of the Black Panthers?
But I think that's part of the conversation. Once you get to a point where there's an organization that you fear, they take it down. Whatever they.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like if you look at the, I think fear plays a huge factor, because if you look at how strategically anybody who does rise up and try to say something, like the lifestyle that they live or the consequences that they have to go through. Like, look at the civil rights activists that we have had, the lives that they lived. Like, they lived in danger all the time. Like, you know, like the old school, you know, taking all the way back, MLK, Malcolm X, all those people, like they didn't have necessarily lived the lives that we would desire to live today. So it's scary.
But let's go back.
Girl, go ahead, and then we're gonna wrap this up and move on to the next segment. Go ahead.
Because here's my thing. Mike mentioned Nation of Islam, Black Panthers, right? That was black people fighting on behalf of black people, right?
Mm-hmm.
PETA is not run by animals.
There you go.
You've got people that are advocating for animals all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So where is that organization that does that? And look, it doesn't have to just be about black people. It could be about homosexuals. It could be about whatever. You know, it could be about Muslims. Where is the organization that's advocating for everybody else?
See, the issue with, I guess, perception nowadays is exactly what you just said. If one individual from every single team saw what Kaepernick did and decided, you know what, I'm going to stand next to this man, they start making that wave. One ripple at a time, and that's how the momentum is built.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said earlier about them not feeling like I just can't play football. Like, people have become brainwashed so much that you can do whatever to me, just don't stop my check. Yep. You can do whatever to me, just don't interrupt the way I live from day to day.
Exactly.
And when you make me uncomfortable, then I'm gonna get, like I said, I was trying to bite my tongue earlier, but I cringe every time y'all was saying, get back in the graces of. The oldest kid, we might have kids watching the show, sorry. so pretty much is the NFL, NBA, if you really look at it, is the next slave trade market.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how you look at it, and you can debate all you want to, anybody out there want to do it, that's fine. But people are being bought and sold, and their souls are being sold in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And until we have somebody, you know what, and we stand behind them when they do it, like Kaepernick, he didn't. And I don't follow this whole story. I didn't follow it all the way through, but I know the stories I did read was when he was out of work and still not being picked up, but yet he was giving all the donation of all his shoes to a homeless in there when he was going out and donating all this. The man and everybody should have jumped behind this man and supporting him and whatever he did. And until we do that as a group, and I'm not just talking about black, I'm just talking about as people to stand up for human rights, like anything to do with politics, anything to do with religion, anything to do with just basic human rights from day to day. Until we do that as a society, it's gonna be the same thing, being bought and sold until your soul is gone. And then the next person gonna come on and you kick to the curb.
Amen, brother.
There it is, BJ. I appreciate you, man. That was a great way to wrap that up, man.
Peter kept us on that sponsorship.
We love the animals.
Faison, we coming over to you next, man. We coming to Artist Corner. You was gonna give us some of that financial fledging, man. So what are we talking about?
Yeah, wow. Trying to climb out of that hole. It's pretty dark down there. Let's get some. Wow. Okay. So I kind of want to start off with this. So, you know, my initial thought, and I kind of thought about this process after last week, and had my mind going on what I was gonna say, but today, literally, I would say probably 3 hours ago, I just happened to be stopping at 7-Eleven. So we're going after the baby appointment, checking up on number two. And I walk into the convenience store, and I just happen to see a girl. She had to be probably 9 or 10 years old behind the counter. Her mom's there. Her grandpa's there working. But she's just there behind the counter, just as happy and cheerful and joyful. You know, working in the area that's predominantly, you know, Latino and black. And I'm going to say just broadly and very ignorantly, but say some part of India. I can narrow down the specific, you know, state. But I see her there, and her, my mom and grandparents were just teaching her the way the family business is run. Like they are reinvesting her. And even though, you know, someone come in there and they can be like, oh, you know, this little girl, I'm going to take her. I'm going to call the labor department and say that they're making this little girl work. No. It's not about that. It's the fact that she's there. You can always just say that, you know, this is my daughter. I'm just showing her some cool tricks and go around a circle. But the fact that their family is reinvesting in the young one. So she's summertime, she's probably working 3 hours a day, 4 hours a day, but she's learning that business from her grandparents. And it's crazy because I think back to all the 7-Elevens, all the convenience stores, everything that we have in all different type of neighborhoods. If, you know, you travel around, you go to, you know, an aesthetic Jewish neighborhood, you're going to see an aesthetic Jewish convenience store owner. You go to, you know, suburban corner store, it's going to be more of a 7-Eleven or more of a, you know, a Circle K or something nice, but you're going to see that type of person working in that store. But then you take the same ride down to any affluent city area, Detroit, Harlem, Philadelphia, MLK Boulevard, like you see, look at all these places. And, you know, we as black people don't own anything in our neighborhoods. And I tie it back to what Jay-Z said last week, like, don't die over something your mom is renting. Like, we're giving all the money we have in our pockets, it doesn't bounce 3 or 4 times in our neighborhood or in our community to grow. We immediately get paid. And I'm generalizing, so, you know, don't kill the messenger, but we get paid and we give it to someone else who came into the neighborhood that we're living in. We don't own the neighborhood, we live in this neighborhood. And then it's going from their pocket to their neighborhood because they're now keeping it in a very tight-knit community. And they're working there and it's bouncing around there a couple of times before it goes back somewhere else.
Well, the first problem is you assume that we have communities. We do not have communities. Because a community, definition of a community is an area where you run the government, you have a fire department, you have a police department. That's what is traditionally defined as a community. We don't have any.
Right. And I don't think the only time we had that was very few. Correct. There are some Dallas, the prime area of a person. Dallas is very community oriented. And it's kind of like the positive of segregation. And that word is very, can be tainted. But the mindset that, you know, you have to build in where you are. How are you going to increase and show the people around you, show your kids, show your family what's happening if you don't have the example of these small things like a corner store? How much is that investment in a corner store? How much money do you give to that owner that you can say, hey, there's an abandoned building right around the corner, probably opposite the street of the guy that's there selling it or the woman that's selling it. and you could have said, hey, I'm mom or dad, I want to do this and start small and do it. Do it professionally. Make the shelves look nice, make this everything where it should be. Don't run out of product, because we tried. And I was in Philadelphia, and I up the street from me, there was a black family that owned the convenience store. They made food, they made things, but there was consistently either lights out of product, because they're waiting to get paid from the community, making pay for people coming in, buying things to pay for the next process. And it's kind of like, we need to think way beyond this part. I'm going to open the floor up so you guys to think about how we can go this process. But I just see that we're always giving, selling, and giving our product, our money and things away, or even our neighborhoods away. And we never think about how we could take that, or how we can make that happen and revert that back to us, so that we're now moving it without the fear of someone coming in and taking it, or taking it away from us.
Yeah, I think it's the patience. I think it's the actual patience to start it and be committed to it, to continue it over time. It's where you have something to give down. A lot of people start their own business. They get frustrated that it's not getting off of the ground, and that there's a dollar amount that they have in their mind that they're not making. Mm-hmm. So because of that, they start diverting and going to find other jobs. That business doesn't become sustainable, and then there's nothing left. So in terms of trying to get the hands up to figure out, okay, well, I'm a first generation business owner. Mm-hmm. It's different from these people that have gone through generations of having it, to where they've already got an established reputation in the community. Mm-hmm. There's already a nest egg that they can hand down to people to give you seed money to start it. There's a belief, there's a understanding and experience of, this is what we do and this is how we do it. If you look at African American families, they go from generation to generation in jobs, but very rarely do they go from generation to generation in entrepreneurship on a large scale, to where you can have a whole community that can do that.
Has the Black American dream, and I say Black American because I don't believe in the African American terminology. My wife is African American. I'm Black American. But the mindset of the Black American dream, has that caused us not to think humbly and say, hey, you know, I may be able to open this door, and all of my focus is to put my son or daughter through college. And when my son or daughter comes back from college, either they're going to go on to be something bigger, or they're going to come back and expand this business somewhere else. Like, it's how it starts. I'm just wondering, has that dream that we have changed and ruined our mentality, that we got to have the flashy, got to have this, got to have this, but can't hold
on to that? We never had a dream.
That's not the dream that we had.
We never had a dream, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Our dream was being able to go to the same schools and drink from the same water fountain.
Our dream was equality. Yeah, our dream was a world where all of us could live and do stuff without people, Colin Kaepernick and saying you need to cut your hair in order to look more like us.
And that's exactly what I was hoping you guys would say, that, because the fact that equality is a dream is already a problem. Yeah, why do we need to be equal to someone else versus it being, this is what we deal with when we have foreigners coming in? They just come in and say, I see the opportunity, I'm going to take it. And
okay, you said a lot of things in the opening spiel. So first thing,
please go.
Is when they sit with their daughter, their granddaughter in that store, it's that the idea of passing generation to generation and keeping something in the family.
Yeah, proud.
Most Black families, you trace back, there was nothing to pass down. And then the point of, I'm going to achieve something, I'm going to do something. And in a lot of cases, except, your hair care products and other industries now, you're going into sciences and medicine and things like that, are starting to feel that pass down. But we didn't have anything to pass down as far as wealth or business opportunity. We had knowledge, and a lot of that knowledge was how to fight and survive, not thrive.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It was survival mode, thrive.
Really, it was real survival. I mean, so at the end of the day, that's what we do.
Correct. So when you look at that right there, that gives you the first definition of what you talk about when you talk about generational poverty. Mm-hmm. When you talk about generational poverty is, I don't know how to get there because I've never seen an example of it. So I don't know what to aspire to. Second thing you said is about the kids learning. Well, this is the part of education as a whole that I kind of have issues with. Mm-hmm. as a whole, for no matter what race, what creed you're talking about. If you look at the educational system, well, what do most people do? Most people in the U.S. have gone to public school. You have the elite that have gone to private school. Like I say elite, but I mean the privilege, or mm-hmm. they had the opportunity through scholarships later on based on whatever other things were out there. But the educational system was designed for the industrial age, when they needed mm-hmm. they needed workers to be able to read and write, to execute whatever orders they needed on a daily basis in the factories and as business started taking off. Now, times are changing. We're in the information age, but the educational system has not changed. We don't teach kids to be entrepreneurs. We don't teach kids to be thinkers. We don't teach kids to go beyond the traditional.
Life skills.
Basically, we don't teach them how. We teach them how to go get a job. We don't teach them how to own. We don't do that. And that's the issue with the music.
They teach a standardized curriculum for you to pass a standardized test for you to live a standardized life.
That's you're totally correct when it comes to education and books. Now, what I ask of you guys, and what about that kid that happens to, you know, buy candy or buy something in school, sells it in school, comes home, reinvested it, buy more product in the store, goes home and tell mom, hey, I'm selling candy or selling this in school, and mom or dad says, you're wasting your time. Stop focusing on that. That's crazy. And just read your books.
Because they don't understand.
That's like a vision.
You they just don't understand.
I don't know how many parents necessarily would do that. I don't know how many parents, even you know, black parents, I don't know that their child coming home and say, I'm making money by doing X, Y, Z, that they're going to be a dream killer in that sense. I do feel that the issue is it was access and understanding. You know, we are just now getting to a point where we really understand and know how easy it is to start a business, and that you can create businesses out of anything and try to figure out stuff. And like Mike said, the patience is low. People don't understand that.
I think there's a very small group that is starting to understand that.
It is.
Well, there's I think that on a large scale, though, we all understand of the access that we have. What we do with that access is a big issue. However, I think that the understanding of, wow, I can do, you know, so many things just through the internet, and it doesn't matter if I'm in college or you know, going to school for it, I can find different things on this, you know, magic box is already a drop in the ripple.
I don't even know if that's really widespread. So maybe the people that we have exposure to understand that. But I think overall, it's still not something that people really recognize that access, because they kind of have the blinders on, because some people don't want the responsibility and the challenge that's going to come with knowing what that access is.
Well, it's complacency, that mentality of I'm okay, but I'm not worried about what my kids are going to do 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line. And that idea of worrying about, and I can't think of the line now from the song.
But I will continue your comment. I'm okay as long as ... But if I look good, then they'll see me looking good. So again, it goes back again to where the money is that being brought in from their day jobs or their jobs they have. It's all about their outward flashing. And that's been passed down from generation to generation.
Because we try to impress each other. That's the problem.
Exactly. And it's not about...
Also, it was, you know, when we were back in the day, it was almost a sense of fake it till you make it, in the sense of the same Colin Kaepernick. You need to look respectable. You need to be able to... You don't want somebody to think you're a slave. You want them to think you're a house, you know.
But instead of business entrepreneurship... That's what was passed down, like what BJ said. That's the mentality that was constantly given to us, instead of the you can have more, or you can do more, you can achieve more mentality. That's maybe being passed around in other areas of life.
I think even the terminology different. So if you look at the kid that's going to school, like you said, is selling a candy, coming home, they're going to call him a hustler. And they're going to be like, you're about making money. Like, he's not going to be called an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. He's going to put a negative label on it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really want to aspire to grow up and say, well, what does your daddy do? Well, he a hustler. That's
right. Because you cannot solicit on school property.
Right.
You're soliciting. The only thing that you can solicit is those dollar chocolate bars that we give you to raise mm-hmm. money for whatever thing it is we're trying to raise money for.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you can't come to school and sell candy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When I go home, my parent is not going to tell me, oh, I see what you were trying to do. That's very entrepreneurial of you.
Right.
Oh, you can't go in there and break the rules. Mm-hmm. This, that. You know, you have to go in there and make sure that you don't get in trouble. Otherwise, they're going to kick you out.
Yep. Keep your head down. Keep your head down and focus on your books.
It's not of ill intent. It's just she just trying to look out for you. You know what I mean? Or the parent is trying to look out
for
you.
The fear lookout, as BJ was describing, and not the lookout. Like, really, if she was trying to look out for you, she would encourage and understand, too. I think as parents, a lot of time, and even as teachers, don't take the time to cultivate what is coming out in the child. You know, what is, you know, their special talent or gifts, and right. being able to push those out more instead of trying to say, hey, you need to be more like everybody else and you need to stop trying to, you know, do this a different way.
But that's because they don't have that vision.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. They don't have
that vision. So most of us have a friend in common, Hanan Ahmed, I can't remember her married name.
Hanan.
But that's not her married name.
We'll just keep her first name for purposes.
But anyway, her family has a paper product company, and it was started by her kids because they had a school project by her three sons, and they came up with this idea in a school project, and now they have a successful, thriving paper product company in Jacksonville. Shout out to Hanan and her family if they are listening. But that's the type of thing that's because she had that vision to run with that they could cultivate that. Mm-hmm. And make something out of it. Where how many parents are out there missing the opportunities that their kids are probably presenting at that mm-hmm. point?
Yep.
Right? Because we celebrate, and you see it in TV shows still, you see the little lemonade stand out there or the iced tea stand, right? And it's just like, okay, well, that's the same thing. Like, why aren't we cultivating and growing that type of vision, that type of entrepreneurial spirit?
So I think that's where we want to kind of leave that phase. And I'm glad you brought this up because it's going to be an ongoing topic on the 13th.
So many more in the books.
It's so large, you know, and we talked about so many different things, man. But I want to hit on that education piece that you kind of started from, you know, and passing it down. So it has to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It has to start somewhere. So for the listener, the family man or woman, whoever, it has to start somewhere. You have to stop the cycle if you're caught in the cycle right now. The financial literacy is what's most important. So you got to start learning about money. And I'll be the first to tell anybody who wants to talk about money, I hate the concept of money. However, it is a necessary evil within this life. Once you start understanding what money is and how it works, then you can start to build from there. And these are things that, unfortunately, they are not taught in the right way in our school systems, not even in our college education system. So it has to be taught at home. So in order to break that cycle, we have to start at home by feeding that entrepreneurial spirit within our kids, or giving our kids the things that they need to learn the right lessons. Some of us are at a position in our life where we are that person that is going to take our family to the next level. We are that person that is going to build that business or that entrepreneurship that is going to be able to be passed down to our sons and daughters, or is going to be able to employ our brothers, sisters, and cousins. So it starts with you. Mike hit on it with the patience thing. You have to be patient, but you got to be steadfast. So when it comes to trying to build that legacy, as Jay-Z talked about on 444, trying to build that financial literacy and leadership so that you can lead your family, you got to realize that the cycle got to stop somewhere, and you got to start putting in that time and that work to educate yourself on how you can make these things happen. Because somebody else said it, I think it might have been Mike too, or no, I think it was Fresh, the nest eggs. Life insurance policies and things of that mm-hmm. nature are some of the biggest contributors to people investing in their businesses and that are ultimately helping them thrive. Mm-hmm. So start from the bottom, start building that financially literate foundation so that way you can pass that on to your kids, because it might not necessarily start with you and your family. But like we talked about with Colin Kaepernick, it's going to make that spark that will start that fire within your kids, and then they'll be that business owner or what have you in the later generation.
Stop leaving debt on your will.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Easy. So now that we got that out of the way, Coach K, we going to you, and then we got the fresh jam of the week, baby.
Listen, man, I don't even think I need to leave a nugget after what you just dropped.
But that's fire. That was fire. Yeah. I've been practicing.
He did it this week, baby.
That was good.
You're welcome on the assist.
I take that. First jam of the week, baby. What you got for us, Fresh?
Oh, man. Because he didn't have to jump in, let me jump on. I mean, that really threw me off.
Let's buy some time here.
Exactly. I need that little insert the little commercial right here, the Fledgeology commercial right here. But
Fledgeology is brought to you by
Peter. T-Floor is brought to you by the T-shirt right there.
The motivators at Fledgeology. You know, leap, grow, fly. Get you out of your comfort zone. While Fresh is getting ready with the first time. Are you ready?
We ready, baby.
We ready. So go ahead, do your thing.
But yeah, you know me, I like to keep it eclectic. This is a jam, actually. B. Jones had hit me off with. I knew about it before B. Jones hit me off with it, but damn, however,
I love it, Dave,
you know, it was he brought it back to my memory. It just came out this summer. The song is called Meditation, something I think we all need to do, not just all of us at Fledgeology, but all of us as listeners, people in the world, everything, taking that time and moment to be able to get back to yourself and kind of, you know, detox and clear your mind and all that good stuff. But it is by Gold Link, Jasmine Sullivan, and K Tronada. If you're not familiar with K Tronada, that dude,
this joint is fire.
Quick little visual.
For all those that know Crew in the DC area, yes, this is that same dude that gave you Crew.
I'll let it turn up a little bit.
Oh, man, when Jasmine Sullivan come on this joint, man, she started blowing. Just the beat, man. And it's crazy how the those Afro beats,
it sounds real West Africa right now.
Real West beats taking over, bro. Blame Drake.
Blame Nigeria, but okay.
We gotta let it ride till we get to that Jasmine Sullivan part, dog.
Oh, okay. We gotta.
Yeah. Hey, while you listening, man, make sure you check us out on Apple iTunes Podcast. You can find us on Google Play. We're on YouTube, Facebook, SoundCloud. Get connected with us. Subscribe to the show. Give us your comments. Let us know what we're doing right. Let us know what we're doing wrong. And tell us how much you appreciate being able to put a face to the voice.
Oh, there she goes.
Get it.
He is feeling like I did with you.
Join that.
How breasts moving right now is how I move when Jenna comes on. Like, that's my, I feel you.
You hear this thing live, man? I promise. I know it's amazing.
Hey, I just, and again, I'm on that title. If y'all, you know, you want to go ahead and check it out.
I like how the spin is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's title. Title by Black Baby. Jay, holla at us. We definitely would enjoy that sponsorship, baby.
I just want to say that the listeners definitely will let us know when we do something wrong. Jay Dace definitely has a fan club that. Some of them have reached out to me to let me know that we get on Jay a little bit too much.
Hey, I appreciate y'all.
That's what happens with the intern.
Hey, man, we love him. It's just tough love, man.
I try to tell him that he brings it on himself, but they don't believe me.
Hey, man, well, we about to wrap this thing up, man. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Anybody got anything else? Nope. All right, man. That is.
Oh, no, I do. I have something that I want to end this podcast off with.
Of course.
So we know that I live life quite simple. I've finished all the. No, I have. I finished all the new. No, I buy what I want, but I live simply. So
sounds like
So here we go. So
sounds like some integrity issues.
No. It's simple, but straightforward. So I one of my bucket dreams was to attend one of these show tapings in Vegas and in LA. And I think way back in the day, me and Fresh were in Vegas and we were going to take a trip out to LA to go on a Price is Right. Well, that dream hasn't come through yet, but I am officially going to be on Let's Make a Deal on August the 4th.
Really?
Got my tickets.
Oh, you're going to be in the crowd.
I'll be in the crowd. And I hopefully will be picked by Wayne Brady.
You know he's going to be picked. BFB.
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. I'm super excited. That's one of my bucket lists. Again,
that's what's
live? I have a very simple. Yeah. Well, it's not live. It records and it's like,
and then airs
like three, 4 months before they air it.
Yep.
But it is a nerdy episode. So the essence we're going to come in a nerd outfit. So I will be asking you guys suggestions on what to wear for a nerdy outfit.
What you got on right now?
Really excited.
Work.
Yeah, man. Your unicorn looks pretty good.
So you see, I don't think I can put on the I will cut you. That's a little raw for it.
Unicorn shirt with
my lists are going getting smaller and smaller, and it's not a big list, but that's one of the ones that I wanted to do since I was a kid. So all these shows I've seen.
I really thought that you said your list was getting smaller and smaller.
I thought he said his listeners were getting smaller. And smaller.
No, my list is getting smaller. My bucket list is getting smaller.
It's time to wrap up the 13th.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. BG, I appreciate the lie, dog. I'm about to put it in the hole for you. Bam! There it is, ladies and gentlemen. We thank you. We appreciate you listening here with us on the 13th floor.
Many thanks.
But the furniture isn't always the best.
But the views are amazing. Y'all better believe that.
Now is your time to flex.
I'm definitely leaving that in.
I might zoom the camera over to you.